What's up, guys? This is Mike Casu, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week, I interviewed fitness celeb Christmas Abbott. We talk about her dating life, her successes and failures in her competitive career and her personal life, and how all of those experiences have shaped her new life philosophy. Before we get started, if you're interested in hearing about all of our new videos coming out, blog articles, etc., go to brutestrengthtraining.com and sign up for our newsletter. Enjoy the show. All right, what's up, guys? I'm here with Christmas Abbott. Christmas, how are you?
I am awesome. I'm awesome. Thank you so much. What's up?
Thank you for making time for us in your very busy schedule. I really appreciate it.
Thanks. The busyness is self-inflicted, but I think the world of you, and we run with a really cool crew, so obviously I would make time.
Thank you, man. So we got the CrossFit Games coming up, and I know you just told me you don't know the specifics, but I'm curious, what do you usually do when you're at the CrossFit Games? Why are you there?
Well, there's always a hope that I'll go back and compete. So the first two games were on the field, and then the last few has been like just mingling with the fans, to be honest. And it's just as exhilarating as being an athlete, where I get to literally hug and shake hands with all my fans and hear their stories and go and peruse the vendor village and find out what the next coolest training tool is.
Right.
So really, it's just kind of like a it's like the fitness festival of the year.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Give me a hard prediction, male and female, who's going to win this year.
Man, I'm not even. Not even. Because you know what? There's always going to be a wild card. And I have so many friends that are in the top 10 that, I don't want to like make one upset and then one comes out and they get fiery about, coming up and they're underdog.
Right.
I definitely have some people that I love watching, and the games are so unpredictable at times where it just really ebbs and flows. And some of the top athletes that have been there for a long time aren't there this year. And I think that there's just a really interesting mix coming up in the top 10 this year.
Let me phrase it this way, and this might not get you in any trouble. What are a couple dark horses that you think could do really well that people might be overlooking?
I don't know. I have some favorites that didn't make it to the games this year, and I think that one to watch is Ben's little brother Alex Smith. Mm-hmm. He has just been year after year putting in his time, and he's so humble, but he wants it really bad. And I just see him in the next probably 2 to 3 years making it to the games and people going like, where did he come from? Mm-hmm. Ben's little brother, but ultimately he's gonna make a name for himself at the games sooner or later. So watch out for him. He's one to watch out for in the next few years.
I agree. Once he makes that next step, I think he's gonna be very good on the world stage. I think it's mostly mental that's keeping him from going there. And then he's just got so many skills that are far above other people that he's going to do really well at the games once he makes it there.
That kid is ridiculous.
Yep.
But I get so involved with the athletes, and I guess I just, you know this too. It's the same thing that you do, is that we get personally invested and personally involved in a different way than just having like, oh, I look up to them because they do this in training. And, it's a much more of like a friendship forged between a lot of these athletes, and you want to see them all do well. But I'll tell you what, last year it was amazing to watch Matt come and just ferociously take it. So we'll see. I think that no matter what happens, it's going to be an all-out fight. And I think that Noah and Matt are going to go real head to head.
I agree. It's going to be fun to watch. So I have a personal question for you before we really dive into some other stuff. I'm curious, what is your love life like? How is it dating new guys when you're so much in the public eye of fitness?
man. I will be cool 100% on, like, I hate dating, period. I don't like it at all. It's awkward. It's like interviews, but like personal, social aspect interviews. And I just never have been a fan of it, even before I was more in the public eye. But I've been dating this one guy for actually next week is our 1 year anniversary.
Congratulations.
And thanks. He's amazing. And all of the crazy stuff that I do that drives everybody else insane, he absolutely loves. So it goes to show you that you can find somebody that loves all of your quirks.
Right.
And get along with and just be wonderful with. And it's been, you know, he hasn't really been on my social media much. He likes to kind of stay in the shadows, which works well for my life and my work needs. But I don't know. He's just been kind of great. And I put him out there every now and then. He's an occasional man crush Monday. Mm-hmm. And it's funny. I force him to take photos. And he'll he doesn't like to a lot, and he just doesn't like to be out in the public very much, which is polar opposite of me.
Right.
But yeah, the dating life is good.
Nice. I was very curious about that. I can assume that at one point it was a very challenging to balance everything. So glad you found a good guy. Sounds great.
Well, still challenging even in a relationship, and I think that you can really attest to this too. You know, it's important for people to understand that dating is hard, being in a relationship is hard, and it's, you still have to, just because you're in a, you know, a locked in relationship and it's stable, doesn't mean that you get to put it on the back burner. Or the, you know, push away and just kind of let it be secondary all the time. I think that it's important to always have that consciousness of setting time aside for each other. And when you're together. So the thing with Jeff and I is that he doesn't like to come to events because it's no fun if we don't get to hang out. Mm-hmm. But, it, you know, like if we go and I have to work a little bit, he understands that I have to go do my thing. And then when we are at home or we go do something together, I'm not working. I don't pick up my phone. I don't do all of the social media hype. And it's his time and it's dedicated to him and for us to be able to foster our relationship and to grow together. So it's equally as time consuming as dating. But for me personally, I like being in a good, happy relationship.
Absolutely. And I can definitely relate to you. Dee and I mean, it is, as busy as we both are with 10 different projects, we put our relationship first because that is what we like to call the lead domino, right? If we take care of our relationship first, we support each other so much that everything else becomes more successful, easier, and we have more fun doing all of it. So like you're saying, we try to be as present with each other as possible. We put away the phones, you know, set aside entire days to only be with each other and all that kind of stuff. So on the same page with you there for sure.
I love that lead domino.
I think that's originally a Tim Ferriss thing that I picked up. Right?
Yeah.
These big things that we can do that affect everything else in our life.
Absolutely.
Okay, so diving in a little bit, and this is kind of a heavy question, but if you died tomorrow, what would you look back on and be most proud of so far in your life? And coming from a context of you've been so successful in your life already, what would you be most proud of looking back on your life so far?
You know, it's going to be kind of something, you'll probably be surprised.
That's what I was hoping for.
I was most proud that last year during my mom's chemo treatment that I, you know, in the best, like literally I not peaked, but that was the highest I had been to in my professional career. The book had come out. It was a national bestseller. I was on the road 100% of the time. I think I saw you that summer. I know I saw you that summer, and I was a little bit of a wreck at the time. But every moment I had, I flew back to see her and just forged, literally just made the time for my mom. And we spoke every week, whether or not we saw each other. And I'm just so proud that I was able to be there for her in such a turbulent time period, because she's always believed in me. And it was nice to be able to repay that back in some way.
Right.
Yes.
Is your mom still alive?
She is. And she's very jubilant and awesome. Opinionated and outspoken and absolutely back to herself. Her hair is growing back out kinky. She is in official remission. And she had a really, really hard time with the treatment, to the point where, like, she just couldn't move for days. She was getting bed sores and just a series of, you know, you find out a lot when you either go through treatment or you watch somebody really, really close to you go through treatment. And all treatment is not created equal. And unfortunately, my mom got a heavier dose than most, but it's a pretty nasty thing. And it puts in perspective the things that you need to appreciate in life and where you push your time and how you treat people and health wellness. I mean, that is huge.
I couldn't agree more. I had my best friend was put in the ICU for 3 weeks, and I went out and visited him in Peru and spent 2 full weeks in the ICU. He was in a coma for all of those 2 weeks. And that experience was probably the most grounding experience, other than maybe my recovery period of my entire life. You know, I have so much gratitude for my friends, my family, for my health, all of those kinds of things. What else? Like, what did you, that perspective that you're talking about, what specifically did you come up with that you like took away from that experience?
You know, my family and I are very different. we are openly dysfunctional, and, you know, we're really quirky, and people probably see this polished version of Christmas, which I'm not really sure how they got to see that or come to that conclusion. But the rest of my family are just as crazy and outspoken and wild. But we love each other wholeheartedly. And, you know, our dysfunction is that we are just weird people. But we're committed to each other and we love each other. And no matter what, hell or high water, we're going to be there for one another. Mm-hmm. And during this time, you know, I've always just really been consumed with my work because it is my life. And I love what I do wholeheartedly. So I'm always, it's 24/7, you understand it. Mm-hmm. And during this time, our family really came together a little bit closer and made more time for each other and just kind of noticed that just because we don't talk every day doesn't, you know, our idea originally was like, we're close no matter what, so we don't have to talk every day. We can go months without seeing each other. It's cool. We know we're there for each other. And that kind of changed for us where, you know, my sister and I, we talk much more frequently. My brother and I, even, you know, just as frequently, which he is impossible to get in touch with, but now he surfaces. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're just doing more family events together. Next month, we're going on vacation to the beach, which we have never done before. And ultimately just like reprioritizing them in my life instead of just having them knowing that they're there and taking advantage of that. I've definitely just started to incorporate them more and more, and not just my immediate family, but my extended family too. My brother-in-law is such an amazing guy and I just want to know him more, and my nieces and nephews. So I'm really trying to strengthen those family ties through being more present with them and for my life.
That is awesome. I'm curious. I'm reading a book right now that's, so far it's just confirming what I've always believed, but I'm hoping to dive in more to the research. But it poses the idea that most people think of success and happiness as separate things, and that you have to become successful in your career or financially successful, et cetera, in order to be happy, right? Once I get this car, I'm going to be happy. Once I get this job, I'll be happy, et cetera. And this book is talking about how a lot of the most successful people in the world look at it the other way around, right? They're going to become happy, and that's going to make them more successful. I'm curious, how is this, how is that experience and, like, you know, wanting to spend more time with your family, how has it affected your professional life, if at all?
Well, you know, it's pretty amazing, because instead of just running myself and accepting everything, all jobs, all offers, which I didn't do before, but I filled my entire plate with work. And instead of doing that now, what I've done is I'm like, look, I'm only going to really do the things that, that make sense for my timeline in order to be able to have this other time with my family. And it's paying dividends, because now when I see my family, I'm not working. I'm present with them. And then when I see my family, I'm not super stressed out, and I can go back and be present in my work. And it's not necessarily compartmentalizing, but really able to separate the two, where it's a healthier balance, mm-hmm. where before they were just bleeding over and they had no respect of boundaries of one another because I didn't allow the boundaries to be there. And ultimately, I can be happy in any job. My mantra, like one of the things that I truly believe and I try and just constantly daily remind myself, is that if the bottom fell out of my success today, like, and all my finances went away and everything was just washed to ground zero, then I still have my relationships and I'm still happy with who I am and what I've done, and I can go work and sling beers and be able to make a dollar to make ends meet no matter what. And that's an amazing place to be at. So success will come and go. I've been successful multiple times in my life, and I have also been broke many times, mm-hmm. and they are not corresponding with each other. Right. So I feel that even if everything else got washed away tomorrow, that I would still be successful with where I am.
Absolutely. That's a great way to live and view life. I'm curious, have you always thought that way?
No, not at all.
How did it change for you?
You know, I'm not quite sure exactly when it was. It may have been a couple of years ago. I haven't always. Once I figured out how to harness my energy and apply it in a productive manner instead of a destructive manner, that was a game changer for me. And, you know, the first thing I did was open a gym, but that was because I had a boot camp, and that was because the girls at my work that I was serving beers at kept harassing me about what they needed to do to do this fitness stuff that I, you know, looked as good as I do. And I was like, look, this is what you need to do. Just go do it. And I didn't have interest in teaching them. Well, they bugged me, so I started a boot camp, saved the money from the boot camp. They bugged me to open a gym. I opened the gym, and I thought, man, I like, this is it. I've made it. It's before I'm 30. I have my own business. It's doing well, changing people's lives. I am successful. And then the same year, I got on with CrossFit HQ. And I remember driving past my gym on my way to the airport and going, man, this is my success. This is it. And then, you know, so I keep working this, and I keep climbing this perceived success ladder. Ultimately, it's just a work ladder, right? So instead of a corporate ladder, we have these life ladders of work with entrepreneurs like you and myself. Mm-hmm. And keep climbing it, because you conquer the goal and you move on. But, you know, when my mom went into treatment, my sister, my brother, and myself were there with her and her husband for Christmas. And she sat us down. And this was when it wasn't Christmas. It was around her birthday. And this was when the treatment was just really rough, and, you know, it's just unknown. And so she sat us down and she said, you three are my greatest accomplishments. And during that time period of her treatment, it just put a different perspective on what my success is. And she said, no matter what, Christmas, you're always going to be successful, because you have a message and you've been living that message. And, you know, so I'd have to say it's a little bit more than a year ago that really kind of shifted for me in what I think or associate with as in success.
That is so cool. Thank you for sharing that. It's interesting, too, that you said you have that your mom told you, you have a message and you're living that. And it's like anybody, it's like a message, you can replace that with the word value. And a successful life seems like one to me that you live by your values, right? That is successful as long as those make you happy. So anybody can attain that at any point in time. They don't have to get a certain accolade or amount of money or job or relationship to make them happy. It's all in their power to be happy at any moment.
It really is. And that's so beautiful. I mean, how wonderful it is it to just to be like, you know, happiness is in you, in your decision.
Very cool.
Yeah. And my mother always told me, and I remember this growing up, and I always, you know, I thought, oh yeah, you know, you got to say this because you're my mom. And she was like, you know, Christmas, you have a gift. You have a light inside of you and it shines bright. And I thought, well, that's because you're my mom, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's funny because it took me many, many years to, and many attempts to try and almost put out that light. But ultimately it still shines and it comes out, and it's successful for me to be able to have her see that I have actually recognized it and I live it now. And it's a pretty incredible feeling.
Wow. So I'd love to ask this question to uber successful people to kind of normalize them. I think a lot of people assume that the most successful people are perfect and they don't have doubts or anything like that, like normal people. What are you, Christmas Abbott, afraid of? And do you have any weak moments? And if so, what do you do about those?
Oh man, all of those are loaded questions. Michael, you and I have hung out before, so you spent 5 minutes with me and you were like, that girl is kind of quirky, weird, crazy. And, you know, it's, you know, like, I am not on a podium. I am not entitled. I don't really ever want to be, and I like people to help me keep that in mind. What fears do I have? Honestly, my lifetime biggest fear is not living up to my true potential. And I actually just wrote a little short story about this that's going to go on Barbend eventually. And basically, it's how my fourth grade teacher called me an underachiever. And I didn't know what that meant. And once I was older and discovered that I could actually live up to my true potential, I have been in this fear of being an underachiever since. Mm-hmm. So really, I just want to look back and go, I did everything that I wanted to do and made a beautiful legacy that is going to continue to support my message. So that's my biggest fear, is not living up to that, to my own expectations, I guess.
Absolutely. What do you do with that feeling? Like when you start feeling like, you know, like questioning yourself, like, am I doing everything that I can to reach my potential, or is this enough, or et cetera, et cetera. When you have that feeling in your chest or your shoulders or whatever, wherever that happens for you, what do you do to get through that and continue taking action, you know, and walking on the path that you're walking?
Michael, I'm going to go ahead and tell everybody that that happens a lot more than they think it does. Mm-hmm. I came in today in a whirlwind frenzy. I'm doing an investment on a property right now, and it's, you know, investments are kind of quirky because it's not guaranteed. And I like to have multiple things happening at once, but I look at what I could be doing and what I want to be doing and then where I am. And sometimes they don't all match, and I get freaked out, and then I stop, and usually, like, I like to meditate. I like to, when that happens, I look back at my successes, and I look back, or I call my mom.
Beautiful.
But I look back and see what I've done up until this point, and then where I got started from, and the timeline for that, and it helps ease it a lot, and really you know, people always want the next thing. They are always clawing for the next level, and I get it because I'm ambitious too. But you have to remember where you started from in order to be able to appreciate that journey. And if you're not appreciating the journey, then you're never going to be satisfied for what you have. So in those moments of frenzy and self-doubt, I just kind of remember that I've made it through a lot tougher situations with a lot less and a lot more to prove. So it actually really calms me down to kind of put things in perspective like that.
I love that. One thing that's been useful for me, one is thinking about fear as just what it is. It's a feeling, right? And it doesn't necessarily mean that I have to change my action. I'm hardwired to have fear on a million different things. And so if I can just get that physical feeling out of my body, then I can just continue doing exactly what I was doing, right? So the way that I get out of that is through the breath, like you're talking about meditation and stuff like that. Something that Adi and I have been working on a lot recently is breathing in the moment when we have some kind of quote unquote negative emotion, right? So I feel afraid of the future, or I'm like worrying about how I should have done something in the past, and I take 5 deep breaths. At deep breaths in, and they should take twice as long on the exhale. And that's just going to do what is called hijack your nervous system and hopefully bring you back to the present moment. It's been very, very useful for us.
I love that, Michael. I'm going to definitely look into try that. And I love how you said, you know, like fear is a feeling. It is absolutely a feeling. It's a perspective that you have. And I tell my athletes this. I'm like, fear is just is a disguise for excitement.
Mm-hmm.
And exactly. It's just your perception of it. And that means that you are feeling something about that event or situation. So you get to decide how you perceive it, and that will shift the fear to excitement.
Right. Perceive it more as a challenge to grow and learn. Right. No matter if you fail in the moment, and it becomes exciting, like you're saying. I love that. It's awesome. Wow. What was your first public speaking engagement like, if you can remember? What was going through your head and how did it end up going?
Other than the mandatory ones in high school that were awful. Oh, my God. Take a teenage girl. It's awkward enough and put her in front of a whole group of people. Mm-hmm. I think, as far as like an adult out of school, was my first CrossFit HQ lecture on presses. No, it was deadlift. I had to teach the deadlift. And, you know, there's 60 people that are looking at you as a subject matter expert, and it's your first, you know, very, very calculated speech, for lack of a better word, presentation. And you know, you have to hit certain points because you're giving them the information that they're going to be tested on and that they're going to take back and teach other people. And I remember I was a wreck, but the thing that helped me really combat those nerves was practice. And I learned that from a fellow teammate that coached me through my first competition. He said, look, like the day of is when you show up and you do exactly what you know what to do. It's every day preparing and making sure that you used your time appropriately and to the best of your ability to lead to that moment. Mm-hmm. And so I was like recruiting people to listen to me for half an hour on this lecture all the time and just rehearse it in the mirror. And it was a pretty amazing experience.
That is awesome. I think it's interesting you're talking about practicing in terms of public speaking. I think public speaking is one of those things that traditionally it gets lumped into the category of like genetics, right? People are just they're either good at public speaking or they aren't. But as we know, it's just like anything else. The more you practice, the better you're going to be. So I'm glad you had that experience. That's awesome.
Yeah, there's definitely tools to, you know, it's just like any application, typing, double unders, snatches, whatever it is. It takes practice and fine-tuning those fundamentals. Some people naturally have the gift of gab. Some people do not. But everybody can be a good public speaker through practice.
Right. I have a few fitness-related questions because I heard you fitness a little bit. So you travel constantly. Do you have any rules with yourself for staying in your routine in regards to diet and exercise when you're on the road?
You know, I just make sure that if it's a cheat day, then it's a cheat day, or not cheat day, but if I get my cheat item, then I get my cheat item. If I'm going to an event where I know that I get to, you know, the girls are drinking or we're like having a social friends event or family and we're going to have some cocktails and some maybe not so great food, then I do it guilt free. But I always pre-scout where I'm going to work out, look at the itinerary, figure out what I'm going to do. I'm very regimented with the schedule usually when I travel, and I stick to it, and I'll allot myself free time for shopping or doing something else, but I tend to see it as a work week when I'm in the office, in the same way as you would schedule anything else.
Right. Something that I've had trouble with in the past is like, well, you know, we'll go from Boston to New York to Miami to California, right? And we're in a new place every few days. And so it almost feels like, even though it's all for work, it feels like vacation, right? And I want to eat at all of the best restaurants and all of these places. Do you just think of it as, and you might have already answered this, do you just think of it like you're at home and you're just going to stick to whatever diet you're on, stick to whatever food choices you're choosing in general?
I'll be honest, it depends on where I am with my training regimen, on how strict I adhere to that. So, for example, if I'm going somewhere, I'll make sure that you know, and I'm a foodie. I love eating at different places. I'll make sure that my breakfast, lunch, and like an early dinner is spot on with my with my workouts and or my meetings and everything. But if I were planning to go out to eat, then I'll make sure that I kind of allow that leeway, but I stay within what I need to do. If I'm training, if I'm close to a competition, usually if I'm a month out from a competition, I don't travel and I don't eat out. Mm-hmm. But if I am traveling, then I'll usually save like a dinner or two dinners for, for exploring a little bit. But even then, you know, it's like sushi or something that's within my macro assignment and not going completely off the edge.
So no fried shrimp po' boys?
Oh, man, I love them. I love them. But if I'm in training mode, that has to be like right after a competition.
Right. Cool, cool.
Not immediately after, like not that day, but you know, that's usually in the one or the few weeks that I get to kind of go off the res.
Right. What's been the highlight of your competitive career so far?
Whew. Man, I feel like that's like asking me who my favorite kid is. You know?
Give me one in your top five.
Okay. I guess we got to start from the top five. Top five, my first competition ever, because I had no idea what I was doing, and it was so fun.
Is this a CrossFit competition, weightlifting? What are we talking about?
It was a CrossFit competition.
Gotcha.
And that was in 2010, and subsequently went to the games that year. So, the games 2010 for me. Definitely the games 2011, because that was when Reebok came on board and they just like blew the games out of the water. Daytona 500 debut for NASCAR. And then, I want to put more weightlifting in there. Last but definitely not least, I think Nationals last year, was it year before? I can't remember. Just that experience on the stage of being at Nationals with USA Weightlifting. Mm-hmm. So number one, I don't know, man.
You don't have to answer that. We'll take the, we'll take your top four there.
Jeez. Oh, man.
I didn't know we competed against each other either. I was at the games in 2011. That was my first year.
Hey.
Yep. Very cool.
We're in the slot to go back.
That's right. I'm about ready to make my comeback.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, I got a tough one for you. I don't know. I think it was the this most recent year. What was the experience? I think you bombed out at the AO.
I sure did.
What was that experience like, and what did you take away from it?
Oh, man. It, like, still brings tears to my eyes. So I failed the jerk on the clean and jerk last attempt, and I didn't finish the other two cleans. So I had never, I don't know how to explain this. It was devastating because I had such high expectations for myself, but more so because I knew that I could and I should have. So, you know, the responsibility was up to me, and I just didn't maintenance myself properly. And I knew that I wasn't. So, and I thought, well, you know, like, let me just push through this and push through this. And then my body said, no, you're not. So it was definitely my fault. And walking off the stage, bawling, it made me, one, appreciate the sport and the demand of it too, so much, but two, like, really want to refocus on all of the components of wellness and competition. So being well is not the same as competing. And I think that I try to make that really clear, especially with CrossFit, because CrossFit is a wonderful training regimen. But if you compete in it, then that is a different sport. So there's CrossFit for fitness and then the CrossFit for sport. And there's a bit of a different approach for both. So it just helped put me into a perspective of how bad do I really want to be on that stage. Mm-hmm. And putting the correct components for my well-being into place. So I took a little bit of a break afterwards because, I mean, I couldn't even lift my arm. It was so wrecked. And since then, I've been trying to maintain a good health fitness level, but I've also enjoyed indulging in my work a little bit more and just kind of taking a little bit of break from the competition lifestyle. Mm-hmm. I had been in that lifestyle since hard 2010, you know, 2010. What am I talking about? 2010, and hadn't taken any kind of reprieve in those years of training. So finally in December, it caught up to me, and it was a rude awakening. I still get emotional about it because it was, you know, I failed at something that I expected to excel at.
And that you put in a lot of time and gave your, what at that time you thought was your best effort, right?
So much. I PR'd my snatch.
Nice.
Yeah, it really was my best effort. And I think maybe that's, you're right, Michael, where that was the most heartening thing is that I gave it my all and it wasn't enough. Mm-hmm.
And that is the absolute scariest thing, in my opinion, right? That I will give my everything to whatever it may be, whether it's career or relationship or whatever, and my best just isn't good enough. But, I mean, you're living every single day fighting that fear, right? Just going out into the unknown, and this was one, the only one of many experiences that just didn't go your way, huh?
There's a whole laundry list, but this one was very public, and it was very important to me. But here's the thing, Michael, that I want to make sure that everybody knows is that it was supposed to happen that way. That was what my story was supposed to tell, and with that, I came back, and it's not like I didn't get back into the gym the next day. I did, actually, but I, you know, didn't go into competition mode. I actually focused on my business, focused on my personal life, and was able to really kind of take that to a new level, where I wouldn't have had that opportunity had I completed that lift, because I would have just gone back into that competition cycle. My body needed some reprieve. My business needed some love. And that's the benefit of this. And I see it as a blessing, which every tragedy has. And, you know, I'm appreciative to that failure, because it's created other successes.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. That's awesome. You pivoted on something that could have been devastating and made the most out of it.
Yeah, it did make me cry a lot, though.
I'm sure.
I was not okay. It is okay.
Yep. Let's see. Imagine someone comes up to you with this scenario. They've tried the zone diet, paleo, counting macros, carb backloading, etc., and just haven't been able to stick to any of them long term. And they come to you and they say, "I don't feel confident in my body. It really gives me a lot of stress, anxiety. I don't love myself because of it, and I really want to change my body. What should I do?"
Well, first I'd have a conversation of what is it, why do they not love their body? And then, to be honest, at that point I would ask if they had had any testing. You know, have you had your thyroid tested? Look and see what your hormones look like. What didn't stick? Why didn't it work? What has happened? And then additional outside stressors, you know, relationship, work, financial situation, overtraining, undertraining, are you, you know, friends, drinking. There's a whole list of things. Basically, so we kind of do this at Invoke, is that we have one-on-one nutrition counseling. And there's a questionnaire that we have, and we sit down and talk to them, because sometimes people's failures are not in what they're eating. It's in their life. And they aren't understanding how to set up their life for success so that they can implement this a little bit easier and implement it as a lifestyle, mm-hmm. not just a crash and burn. So yeah, I would just kind of sit them down and run through a series of questions so we can together see what potentially is the root of the problem, and then together implement systems to make sure that we find a successful solution that's going to be long term. Ultimately, what I discover really from these, I know I talk a lot, from people that have this type of scenario, is that they are perfect or not in it at all. And there's this mantra that I kind of push out there a lot, is that it just needs to be consistent and proficient. So if you are eating 3 out of 4 meals that are good, not perfect, not great, but good, then you are going to be much better than not applying it at all. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's no quick fix to that, and there shouldn't be.
I love that example too. Something that Adi has just taught me recently is the idea of having a diet or lifestyle that includes healthy foods rather than what's the word? What's the word? Exclude. She's right next to me. Rather than excluding, I don't know why I couldn't remember that. Excluding bad foods, right? If we fill up a lot of our meals with these good foods, and we meet our micronutrient needs, we meet our macronutrient needs, then these extra foods that we love to eat and that we're always going to want to eat don't really hurt us, right? Because we're meeting all of our needs, and then those are, sure, they might be empty calories, but we've already met our needs, and that can kind of help with the willpower piece of it and help us stick to it, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, I agree with Adi 100%. And you'll probably find that we echo each other in a lot of our philosophies.
Mm-hmm. A couple more questions before we wrap up. What is one thing you know now that you wish you'd have known when you were 25?
that I can. I, you know, people think that I've always just been this awesome, confident person. And I'm like, no, I was very insecure, even through my early years of CrossFit, that I can if I really want it. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, I would have started slaying much earlier.
Nice. What would you... How would someone, if someone doesn't believe they can, what is there something that they can do, something that can, like an actionable item for them to overcome that feeling of I can't or I'm not good enough?
You know, I talk about this in my seminar, but I tell a lot of people this, is that I lied to myself for many years, and the mantra, like the thought that I think that I'm the baddest bitch in here, is what I would tell myself in my mind when every time I would go into the gym and do a workout. Not because I actually thought I was, it's because that thought was louder than the doubts in the back of my head. And so if you have a negative doubt, then you need to drown it out with positive affirmations for yourself. And you know, women are notorious for undermining themselves even when they're super successful, meaning that like you could have a girl and she crushes the workout. She beats every man in there, every woman in there by like minutes and minutes, and she does the same weight, like literally pound for pound excels. And then you're going to be like, great job. And she'll go, thanks, but so-and-so wasn't in here, so I think that they would have, you know, I could have done a little bit of this, or, you know, somebody wasn't in here to, if they would have had the better score had they been here, or they just don't take credit for their good work. Mm-hmm. And I would love to see more women going, thank you, yeah, I did crush it today, didn't I? And just being a little bit more confident with themselves, but you got to practice it, and it doesn't always have to be believed when you're practicing it. I challenged one woman in here. She always comes in and she's amazing, but she's always like, ah, damn, done. You know, just like a small, slight negative undertone with anything in the sense of, oh man, these suck, or man, these are my hardest things to do. And I always tell her, I'm like, they're the best things for you to practice, and these are the most fun things for you to try. So you just got to kind of spin it how you think about it and practice it diligently. Again, practice. Mm-hmm. Just like our bodies, we have to practice training our minds to think the way that we want to think.
Right. Nothing breeds confidence like consistency and practice.
Boom. Nailed it.
My last question. I think you were at the mastermind when Bledsoe asked all of us this. What do you want to make absurd in 25 years? You remember this question?
I loved this question. I've had multiple conversations about this question. And, you know, I want the confusion of nutrition to be absurd in less than 25 years. That, you know, it's kind of like, why wouldn't you eat to get to your goal? Like, why wouldn't you eat XYZ to get to your goal? I want the confusion of nutrition for the foundation of it to be absurd in 25 years. Yeah.
That's awesome.
There's a whole laundry list of that, Michael.
Right.
That's what done. The absurdities that we're gonna
create together.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a great answer. Okay, where can people find you?
I'm pretty.
Like they already don't know.
Yeah. One thing that I'm doing is that I'm doing a weekly shout out newsletter. So if they want to sign up for my newsletter, they can go to christmashabit.com. And through the newsletter, I'm talking about exactly kind of what we're talked about today. Just the more conscious and insightful things of training, life, nutrition, the struggle. And otherwise, christmasabbott.com, it's getting revamped. And then my Instagram is christmasabbott. So not a lot of complex searching there. But
we'll link to all of that in the show notes as well, guys.
Thanks. but yeah, it was, I, you know, Michael, I love what you're doing. And I love following you. And obviously I love following Adi. I think that, it's so nice to be able to collaborate with people that are in it with you and believe that they can make a change like you with Brute Strength and, this podcast.
Well, I couldn't agree more. Thank you so much for that. And thank you for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. And I get to see you next week.
Yep. See you soon.
Yeah. Awesome.
All right. Have a good one.
Thanks. Bye.